Hello and welcome to episode 120 of the official EstablishTheRun.com podcast. My name is Adam Levitan. I'm one of the co-founders here at ETR. As always, I am joined by fellow co-founder Evan Silva, and today we are going to go team by team through each NFL franchise, talking about important Week 5 takeaways, waiver wire guys, role changes, anything else. Evan, what's going on?
No, coming off a pretty action-packed Week 5. Learned a lot. Got some stuff right, got some stuff wrong. Hopefully we'll continue to get more stuff right in entering Week 6, which, these schedule changes have been kind of wild, yeah. Affecting, you know, even like through Week 11. So we'll have to keep tabs on that. But yeah, let's get into it.
Yeah, and some notable injuries from Week 5 that we're going to talk through. Obviously, the Dak Prescott thing we'll get to in the NFC, and Dalvin Cook went down, and Keenan Allen got hurt, and Deontay Johnson got hurt. And so we're going to talk about all that stuff as we go. I think some pretty impactful injuries, though. Let's start with the Baltimore Ravens. No injuries for the Ravens, and it was really good to see Lamar get 37 attempts off. Like, they came out with a very pass-centric game plan against the Bengals, which was cool. But man, that's not how he's going to dominate fantasy, because he's on pace to run for just 761 yards. He only has one rushing touchdown through five games. And I don't think that's kind of fluky. It seems like, at least to me, they don't want him to run as much this year. And maybe that's just me being a football guy and watching the game. And maybe it's just some small sample stuff. But if he's not going to run like a madman, well, you know, the fantasy value is not going to be as strong, obviously. So what do you think about the Ravens, Lamar, and anything else going on with them?
Yeah, and it would make sense for them to run him less, especially if this knee injury that kept him out of practice on Wednesday and Thursday, and he had a knee injury early in training camp as well. You wonder if that's, you know, if those things are related. I think that we need to, adjust our upside expectations for him. I still think he's, you know, an every week starter in fantasy and in season long leagues. But, him repeating as the number one overall fantasy quarterback does not look likely at this point.
Yeah, and Marquise Brown had a really good game, and Mark Andrews has a good game, and you're going to see that kind of stuff when Lamar attempts 37 passes, but for him specifically, I'd rather see 25 attempts and 15 rushes, of course. Buffalo is playing later tonight. It is 2 p.m. on Tuesday, and we have very rare Tuesday night football tonight. Almost never in the NFL do they play on Tuesday night, so we're going to skip Buffalo for now. We will touch on anything with them when we get to the Friday night show and go straight to the Cincinnati Bengals, so... The good news for Cincinnati, they were down 17-0 at half. I mean, they were getting trucked the whole game against the Ravens. Joe Mixon still dominated usage over Gio Bernard. 51 out of 67 snaps for Joe Mixon out targets Gio Bernard 8-2 as well. So that was really good to see. On the bad side for the Bengals, the corpse of AJ Green is just like giving up. And if you look at some of the Bengals stuff that's out there, I mean, they caught him on the sideline. I think he said, trade me. If you're trying to be a lip reader, I think he said, trade me. He leaves with a hamstring injury. He didn't even go for a ball that Joe Burrow got picked off on. And then as the Ravens are returning it, AJ Green like literally tries to get out of the way. After AJ Green left, T. Higgins led the way with 38 routes, then Tyler Boyd, then Mike Thomas with 15, then Auden Tate. I think the three wide receiver set is most likely to be Higgins, Boyd, and Mike Thomas, but Auden Tate's going to have something to say about that. And John Ross with a healthy scratch. Assuming AJ Green misses time, maybe John Ross actually gets a jersey. So what'd you see out of the Bengals in their kind of ugly loss to the Ravens?
Tyler Boyd took a step back this past week, matching up with Marlon Humphrey. Marlon Humphrey has dominated like their last three matchups. But I think that Tyler Boyd is going to be fine going forward. If last year was any indication, there were a lot of rumors that it wasn't just the ankle injury that was holding AJ Green out of all of last year, that, you know, he had contractual issues with the Bengals. We've seen this over the years with the Bengals. You know, Carson Palmer essentially retired to get his way out of Cincinnati. If last year was any indication, I think that we're going to see AJ Green milk this injury and, you know, just kind of coast into free agency next offseason. I thought that week two game against the Browns, where the Bengals were still using Giovanni Bernard in passing situations and in the 2 minute, but they went out of their way to get Joe Mixon four targets. He caught all four for 40 yards. And ever since then, his passing game usage has gone up, and he dominated the passing game usage this past week. Eight targets, a career high. Those are very, very promising signs for not only Joe Mixon, but for the adjustability of the Bengals coaching staff who I think generally gets it and is making smart decisions with the limited personnel that they have.
I think on a week-to-week basis, I mean, Joe Burrow is going to project for among the most dropbacks in the league. Like, they love dropping Joe Burrow back a ton. So I'm actually excited about Boyd and T. Higgins going forward, assuming we're removing A.J. Green from the mix here. I'd be pretty aggressive on T. Higgins on the waiver wire if he was still out there. We'll get to Chase Claypool in a little bit here when we're talking about wide receivers on the waiver wire. Cleveland Browns. And as expected, Kareem Hunt was the lead dog. You know, I think your roommate Daigle made a good point that Kareem Hunt was leading D'Ernest Johnson 17-2 after three quarters in touches. Kareem Hunt had some cramping. You saw him on the sideline. If you were watching the game where he goes to the sideline, he kind of gets stretched out and D'Ernest Johnson kind of ices the game with a couple runs. But Kareem Hunt, as expected, was the major, major lead dog and performed very, very well. Anything else out of Cleveland, who's playing way better ball than I think pretty much anybody expected, but offensive line improvements and coaching staff improvements have made a big difference for this team.
Yeah, Baker Mayfield came out of last week with sore ribs. It sounds like he's likely to play against Pittsburgh, but this is going to be a really, really tough matchup. I mean, the Steelers match up really well with the Browns. They can kind of take away everything that the Browns do well. We've seen Odell Beckham play. I mean, he's been more explosive this season for sure than last year, but now he's gone 15 straight games without getting to 90 receiving yards. Jarvis Landry had a better game, or his best game under Kevin Stefanski so far this past year, but I think he's still clearly battling after effects from hip surgery. There were a few plays where, I mean, he was limping around the field quite a bit last week, so he is still not a confident fantasy option. Austin Hooper saw 10 targets, but that's also in a game where Baker Mayfield dropped back to pass with 38 times. And that's not something that the Browns want Baker Mayfield to do. They want to use him as a game manager and to be efficient off play action. So I don't think that that's something that we can rely on with Austin Hooper. I think Austin Hooper will be streamable in plus matchups, but for the most part, he is not a fantasy starter still.
All right, let's go to Denver. Denver essentially lost their bye week, which, you know, I don't want to really hear people complain about that because obviously everybody's dealing with different things with COVID and everything. But, you know, I understand what they're saying. They practiced all week, and then at the end of the week, they have their game against New England postponed. They're going to play it this coming Sunday. The good news, I guess, for the Broncos is it gives Phil Lindsay more time to get healthy. I think he'll play in week six, and it gives Drew Lock a chance to come back and play. And I kind of think that Drew Lock will end up playing in week six, but we will see. I would note that they do have their Miami game, which was scheduled for week six, is now in week 11. Let's go to Houston. First game without Bill O'Brien. And of course, like, you know, people are going to say, look how much better they play without Bill O'Brien. Well, you know, it was against Jacksonville at home with Jacksonville playing without four of their best defenders, but still, you know, the offense was better, and we found the Brandon Cooks variance, and I talked a while on the solo pod about Brandon Cooks. You guys can listen to that if you are interested. But what did you see out of the Texans in their first game without Bill O'Brien?
Started slow, and it looked like this game was sort of headed for a bust, and it did bust in terms of the total. The total was 54, was moving up during the week, and it finished at 44. But the Texans rallied in the fourth quarter, and like pretty much all the guys that we wanted to get there got there. Deshaun Watson had a nice week. Brandon Cooks had a blow-up week. Will Fuller was solid. Darren Fells, in the absence of Jordan Akins, he delivered at a very cheap cost on DK. Now Jordan Akins will probably be back this week. David Johnson had his highest rushing total of the year. Still not being used a ton in the passing game, and that's something I think we should expect going forward despite his receiving background. Deshaun Watson, not a check-down quarterback, and now Duke Johnson is back to siphon away, you know, a handful of targets each week.
Yeah. I'm not going to read too much into it. I think they played pretty much the same way that they've been playing. It was just such an amazing spot for them. Okay. Indy, corpse of Philip Rivers, had his biggest meltdown of the season to date. I mean, credit to you. You were on the Friday show, talked about the spot for the Browns. Defense turned into one of the best plays on the week. Phillip Rivers throws a pick six. Phillip Rivers takes a safety after the game. I mean, Frank Reich was tilted, and he kind of composed himself on Monday and said, listen, you know, Phillip can play better. You know, Phillip did some good things. It's not all about Phillip. I mean, look, Phillip Rivers is going to turn 39 in December. I thought there were signs in LA/San Diego that he was toast also. I have major concerns about this Colts offense with Phillip Rivers. I still think Phillip Rivers is a better option for them than Jacoby Brissett, but it's not necessarily a slam dunk at this point. Another thing I noticed with Indy was Trey Burton. I mean, they must really hate Mo Alie-Cox because Trey Burton comes right back in, and Trey Burton is getting the majority of the pass catching looks at tight end ahead of Mo Alie, ahead of Jack Doyle at this point. What do you see out of the Colts on Sunday?
Yeah, Mo Alie-Cox not really even a part of their passing game whatsoever at this point. Trey Burton with 11 targets over the past 2 weeks. And you mentioned there have been calls nationally now for, I mean, Philip Rivers has played poorly in consecutive starts against the Bears, against the Browns. And I think that it definitely could get to a point where the Colts start to consider going to Jacoby Brissett. Now they are facing the Bengals this week. And I think that this should be a breakthrough spot for Jonathan Taylor. I know that we've said that a couple of times over the past couple of weeks, but you know, this is a game that really matches up well for him. The Bengals are going to be without DJ Reader, their nose tackle. Mike Daniels, one of their top three defensive tackles, also has been out for an extended period of time. The running game has just not been firing on all cylinders for the past like month now. And hopefully a plus matchup can get them to a point where, you know, they start kicking into high gear. I mean, there's a lot of talent there on the offensive line with Jonathan Taylor, a high second round pick, and hopefully a positive matchup can spark.
Is Philip Rivers washed? Evan, you can say it. It's okay. Is he washed? Is Philip Rivers washed?
Yeah. I mean, I was never really on Philip Rivers. I was just, you know, I like to defend the old guys in our one-on-one debates.
Okay. Jacksonville Jaguars. I was good to see Laviska Shenault, and he was the right bring back with the Texan stuff. I played Chark in a lot of bring backs with the Texan stuff, which hurt, but Shenault turned out to be the right answer last two games, even with DJ Chark back. And by the way, Chark may have gotten banged up late in week five. Look for an update on that. But Shenault last 2 weeks has run a route on 62% of Minshew's dropbacks, which is okay. Seeing 15% of the targets, which is okay. But he's been productive. 12 catches, 165 yards, zero touchdowns. So I think it's a good thing, a good sign for Laviska Shenault. What did you see out of the Jaguars and really kind of disappointing performance for their offense as a whole at Houston?
Yeah, DJ Chark injured his ankle, I believe, and we really have gotten no updates on that since the injury happened. So that's something that we'll be monitoring heading into Wednesday. James Robinson continues to be a workhorse, 17-plus touches in every game so far, heavily involved in the passing game, coming off another game where he had five catches and seven targets, did lose a fumble. I don't think that his workload is in any danger. Chris Thompson is just a niche back.
Yeah. Okay. The free Mecole movement is on in Kansas City, Evan. And one of the ways that, you know, we didn't like Mecole Hardman at like an eighth or ninth round ADP where he was going in season long. But one of the ways you could see him getting there was an injury to Tyreek Hill for sure. Because I think he's more directly Tyreek Hill's backup. But now we get the Sammy Watkins injury. Sammy Watkins leaves after 21 routes with a hamstring injury. Andy Reid already said Sammy Watkins is going to miss some time. So it sounds like a pretty severe hamstring injury. After Sammy left, it was almost an exclusive three wide receiver set of Tyreek, DeMarcus Robinson, and Mecole Hardman. Byron Pringle didn't really see a role change at all. Now, Mecole Hardman is still out there with Travis Kelce, with Tyreek Hill, with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, with DeMarcus Robinson. I am excited about Mecole Hardman. I'm a little concerned that it's not the Tyreek Hill role that he'll be in. It'll be the Sammy Watkins role. How do you think they're going to use Mecole, and how excited should the people be about Mecole?
Well, Sammy Watkins has been playing a fair bit of slot receiver, and that's what Mecole Hardman played in college primarily. So, but I'm with you that last year it seemed like Byron Pringle was the direct backup for Sammy Watkins, and Mecole Hardman was the direct backup for Tyreek Hill. So I don't think we're going to get, you know, every snap for Mecole Hardman going forward. But I do think that he's going to see a bump in usage, and that he's going to have, you know, he's going to be a high ceiling option when they face the Bills. I guess it's next Monday night, right? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Josh Allen's got two. This is a big run for big stretch for Josh Allen because he's got two island games in a row. But back to the Chiefs. How are you feeling about your May projection for Travis Kelce after this one?
Yeah, Travis Kelce was a beast, and if I could go back, I wouldn't call him meh. I would call it solid. Travis Kelce's solid at this point. Yeah, great game for Travis Kelce. I certainly think it helps with Sammy leaving Travis Kelce, but also, you know, Travis Kelce is obviously someone that is Patrick Mahomes is extremely, extremely comfortable with. And when you're attached to Patrick Mahomes, like, even if we think Travis Kelce is declining, which I have no idea really if he is or not, I'm mostly just busting balls. But when you're attached to Patrick Mahomes, like, you know, I don't want to say bad things about guys who attach to Patrick Mahomes. So I don't really want to say anything bad about Mecole Hardman. In fact, I want to be excited about Hardman. So, yeah. Let's go to the Chargers. Justin Herbert, man. I don't know. I don't remember exactly what your pre-draft thoughts were on Justin Herbert, but I think he's smashing like what anybody, I mean, could have expected. I mean, dude is just balling out on another level. Even after Keenan Allen leaves, like really early, like in the first quarter with a back injury, he does it with Mike Williams and you know, a bunch of geeks off the street, basically. Jalen Guyton and Hunter Henry had a touchdown, which was nice. They barely used Donald Parham again, but Justin Herbert looks like a baller. The other big story out of last night's game was Justin Jackson stepping in. Shout out to us and you who made a big bid to get us Justin Jackson on the FFPC team, because Justin Jackson actually outsnapped Josh Kelly 42-25, out-carried him 15-11, out-targeted him 16-6-1. And Justin Jackson, I mean, just from the eye test, looked way better than Josh Kelly. What did you see out of Justin Herbert, the running backs, and anything else with the Chargers from last night?
I think all indications entering Monday night were that Josh Kelly was likely to be the 60 portion of a 60-40 split with Justin Jackson. But we also knew that Josh Kelly had lost a fumble in consecutive games, that Justin Jackson was a guy that the Chargers coaching staff has been with now for a few years and trusts. And so I was pleasantly surprised to see Justin Jackson run out there for the first snap. And then his utilization throughout the game was really, really promising as the clear passing down back, as the clear 2-minute back, as the guy who was dominating snaps over Josh Kelly in overtime. Now the Chargers head into their bye, and it sounds like Austin Eckler is probably going to miss like maybe 3 to 4 more games. But hopefully we can get, you know, solid RB2 production out of Justin Jackson during that time frame. I'm optimistic that we will. And also that the Chargers can get back Brian Bulaga and Trey Turner, who have both missed multiple games now. I mean, that's the entire right side of their offensive line. Mm-hmm. But overall, the offense, the arrow is definitely pointing up on the offense because of the play of Justin Herbert. I thought he was a Ryan Tannehill level talent coming out of Oregon. But that Oregon and you know, we've seen that Ryan Tannehill is a pretty good quarterback, but I think that the expectations have now risen for Justin Herbert to be, you know, potentially much more than Ryan Tannehill. We've seen another situation to monitor will be the Keenan Allen back injury.
Yeah.
You remember, like, I think it was 2 years ago, Keenan Allen went out in a game against the Chiefs, and it was an Island game, like a Thursday nighter, and Mike Williams just went absolutely off. Well, we saw that again on Monday night against the Saints, where he was out there winning contested catches against Marshawn Lattimore, and you know, he was the difference maker on that showdown slate.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Williams, we didn't even know if Mike Williams was going to play in that game. And then not only does he play, but he played incredibly well. And that's just what he does. People are like, oh man, he made this crazy catch where he was probably like 10% to make the catch. I mean, that's how he gets so many air yards. Like, quarterbacks are willing to chuck it up deep to Mike Williams and hope for the best. And, you know, when he comes down with them, he's going to have big games for sure. The Raiders, brutal stretch continues. They're on their bye this week, but then they get Tampa Bay. One thing that I will say is that Henry Ruggs had a nice return. And I mean, like, this is what he can do. He only saw 3 targets in the game, but one of them goes for 72-yard touchdown. And when you're playing tournaments in DFS, like, it's not just because you don't want to play guys like Henry Ruggs just because they're highly variant. You want to play them because they can speed up the game. And so Henry Ruggs scores a 72-yard touchdown. Next thing you know, teams are flying back and forth at each other. You get a game with elevated plays. You get the Chiefs trailing and situations like that. So Henry Ruggs, you know, I'm excited about Henry Ruggs, man. I love basketball, and seeing those Henry Ruggs highlights got me excited about him. And, you know, he's making big plays on the field. Anything you saw out of the Raiders as they head into their bye. Really impressive win, obviously, in Arrowhead.
I think they got back Trent Brown at right tackle, and then they should get Richie Incognito back after their bye at left guard. So at that point, their offensive line would be fully intact, and that would bode well for Josh Jacobs' second half. Josh Jacobs did get into the paint twice last week, but finished with 85 total yards and you know, has generally been a disappointment in games where he's not scoring touchdowns. But he will be set up for a faster finish. They've got speed on the outside with Henry Ruggs and their offensive line coming together, and Derek Carr playing pretty solid football.
Speaking of upsets, Miami goes into San Francisco, and Evan talked about this on Friday. I mean, they put this smackdown on San Francisco, and I've been waiting for kind of San Francisco to fall apart because this is a shell of the talent that San Francisco normally has out there. But they put the smackdown on them to the point where Jimmy Garoppolo got benched. And we'll talk about that on the NFC pods. But I mean, their defense even played so well. They got Jimmy Garoppolo benched. They held down George Kittle, Ryan Fitzpatrick. I mean, this dude just makes people money in fantasy. At 25 DraftKings points or more in 8 of his last 11 games for Ryan Fitzpatrick, just lighting dudes up. Other thing that I noticed from Miami, Jordan Howard was a healthy scratch. And that should have given a little bit more confidence to Myles Gaskin, who has a borderline bell cow role now, although Matt Breida did play a little bit more. What did you see out of Miami's win in San Francisco?
I think that the most promising takeaway was Preston Williams coming up with a big game, because that was long overdue. He's now reaching to the point where he's almost a full year removed from that ACL tear. I believe it happened in early November last year. We're now heading toward the middle of October, so almost a full year removed. And hopefully that provides some optimism for him to, you know, be an actual fantasy asset. He was getting, you know, a solid number of opportunities in the first 4 games, just capitalizing on nothing. But finally, we saw him capitalize against San Francisco. And so I think that was a pretty promising takeaway.
For sure. Okay, the New England Patriots game got postponed, as we already mentioned. Good news is, I just think there's at least a good chance they get Cam Newton back for this Week 6 game against the Broncos, so we will keep an eye on that. The New York Jets, Geoff Smith, you know, dude got 11 targets. So I think Geoff Smith is at least on the radar as we kind of sort out their injuries and hopefully maybe get Sam Darnold back. But Jamison Crowder, man, dude is just good at football. And 8-116-1 on 10 targets from Joe Flacco, now has at least 10 targets in all 3 games that he's played. He's gone over 100 yards in all 3 games that he's played. It's hard to pull the trigger on any Jets, but Jamison Crowder is just out there doing work on an every week basis. What do you think of him, and what do you think of any other Jets going forward? There are rumors today that the Jets are trying to trade Le'Veon Bell as well. We'll see if they get any suckers to bite on that.
Yeah, Jamison Crowder, although he is sort of seen as a 3 condom player, is actually a spiked week player.
Yeah.
And, you know, whenever he's healthy, he's been generally consistent, but also with big time spiked weeks that can, you know, help win you a week or help win you, you know, money in DFS. So let's change our outlook on Jamison Crowder and no longer view him as a 3 condom player. Let's view him for what he is. And that's a guy who can help us win in fantasy.
A raw dog player, if you will. Yeah. No, it's interesting. Do you think they'll be able to execute a Le'Veon Bell trade? Because, you know, I think they can cut Le'Veon Bell after this year with relatively little cap implications, which means maybe someone could take him as a rental for the rest of this year. Is there anybody that comes to mind that might actually want to give up maybe a 5th or 6th or 7th for Le'Veon Bell?
Not off the top of my head, but yeah, I think that that's what it would probably cost. I mean, I think that they, you know, he's clashed enough with Adam Gase now at this point. Adam Gase has a long track record of trading away, you know, his best players, and then they go flourish away from him. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And I mean, they could eat some money or, you know, what have you, right, to make a move happen. I don't know if it'll happen. I don't know if it'll go down, but I think it's shaping up as a lost season for Le'Veon Bell if he doesn't get out of New York.
Right. I would at least hold him if I had him in season long, which hopefully nobody listening to this has him, because he was one of the most egregious season long picks. But if you do have him, I'd at least try to hold until this trade deadline passes in a couple weeks here. Pittsburgh Steelers, another disappointing early injury for Diontae Johnson, this time his back. You know, he was in play on DraftKings a couple weeks ago, leaves early with a concussion. He was very much in play on FanDuel this past week due to salary, and he leaves very early, only ran 4 routes before he leaves with a back injury. After the game, Mike Tomlin says, or I think it was Monday, Mike Tomlin said, well, you know, I think there's a pretty good chance Diontae is going to be able to play in week 6. So we'll see on that. Of course, at least in part, that leads to Chase Claypool going absolutely nuclear. And I like Chase Claypool, man. Like, he was an outrageous athlete. I mean, tested on off the charts, and people tried to move him to tight end, which Evan has talked about, which would have been a mistake. The Steelers identify him as a wide receiver. He's like 6'4 and ran a 4.38, and they were running stuff for him at the goal line, like, regularly. Like, he was like, what are we going to do at the goal line? Oh, let's get something involved to Chase Claypool. So people want to know, how much should they be blowing of their FAAB on Chase Claypool? And assuming that Deontay Johnson comes back, do you think Chase Claypool will play ahead of Deontay Johnson?
I think he could play ahead of James Washington. I think he could end up, I mean, first of all, right now he's leading the Steelers in receiving yards and air yard share. I think skeptics will point to the fact that Deontay Johnson was, you know, generally out for the last two games, and that elevated the playing time for Chase Claypool. But you mentioned how they're manufacturing touches around him at the goal line. He caught one of his touchdown passes in the slot. I think he ran with like 10 or 13 routes in the slot. So he's now showing position versatility. I think it's very much in play for Chase Claypool to be the Steelers' number one receiver the rest of the way. You know, Leone and Corain and I did a rookie like redraft of the first round, and Chase Claypool did not make it into the first round. He was among the top 15 players, but I think that that was a mistake. I think that he should have gone over, like, I think I took T. Higgins like number 12 overall, and I certainly should have taken Chase Claypool when he was on the board. I mean, just, he's an insane talent. I think that Ben, the way that Ben has played so far, I think you can make an argument that he might have two solid years left after this year, you know, maybe at least one. And Chase Claypool, I mean, just a dominant talent.
Yeah. One thing I'll say about Deontay Johnson is that he's played well when he's been out there, right? So, like, I agree with you that Chase Claypool will hopefully is more likely to replace James Washington than Deontay Johnson, but certainly something to keep an eye on for sure. Last one is the Tennessee Titans. They are also playing tonight in about 7 hours or so. So we're going to skip the Titans and we will get to them on Friday should anything come up. We'll be back for the NFC version. Oh, by the way, Evan mentioned the Corain pod. If you're looking for more free content, highly recommend this. Establish the Edge. It's part of our podcast network. Establish the Edge, it's called. You can find it on any podcast platform. It's free. It's with Leone and Corain talking season-long, talking in-depth on player outlooks and kind of high-stakes stuff like that. Also, our YouTube channel, if you're looking for free content, we are working a ton to help build up the YouTube channel. Would appreciate you guys head over there and hit subscribe over there. It's free. Okay. Thank you for listening to the AFC Team by Team Week 5 recap. We'll be back on the premium side for the NFC Team by Team recap. For Evan, for producer Luke, I am Adam. Good luck, everybody.